All right, we're in Building 50, IE Land. Who are you?
My name is Dean Hakamovich. I'm the general manager of the Internet Explorer team.
Cool. And now, sorry.
Formal introductions here.
I'm Chris Wilson. I'm a platform architect on the IE team.
So the IE team still exists. Let's just get it right out of the way right now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Well, there's this thread on Channel 9 where the Niners are talking about, is the IE team still there? They've been awfully quiet.
We've been busy.
Absolutely. So what have you been busy working on? What's going on?
Well, there have been a bunch of things since IE7 released. Windows Vista.
Heard of that.
Since Windows Vista, there's been a lot of servicing and securing. There's been Vista SP1. But most of all, there's been IE8. Mm. And a lot of work on IE8.
Excellent.
And last week we hit an exciting milestone. Mm-hmm. That really concerns web developers. And we should talk about that in a moment, because this is Channel 9. This is all about developers, right?
Amen.
But before we touch on that, we should just be clear that IE8 is a strong release, and there are a lot of things for a lot of people. I mean, there are a lot of things for end users, for web service providers, for developers, for IT pros. And there are a lot of things that we aren't going to talk about right now because this is Channel 9. Mm-hmm. And as Channel 9, we're going to talk about the dev stuff.
Okay.
Given how long Chris Wilson has been working on this, I think I should let him make the actual verbal video announcement. What happened last week?
So last week, for the first time, we actually had a build of IE that rendered a nice, pretty yellow smiley face on the ACID 2 test page.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Which means that it's standards compliant? I mean, what does it mean?
So the ACID 2 test, actually, it's a collection of tests, a very large collection of tests. And we broke this down, figured out all of the pieces that we weren't supporting. Some of them were bugs. A lot of them were actually very large features that we hadn't implemented in IE yet. And a lot of cascading style sheet features, some HTML features, some extra things like the data URL support. That you needed to do all in order to get this one nice little smiley face.
It's kind of a torture test.
It really is a torture test.
It's a, yes. Or maybe tongue twister is a...
Tongue twister is even better, yes. Yeah. Say this five times.
So there really is a lot of subtlety in the ACID 2 test. Mm. And, you know, it's good subtlety. It's what one set of people feels very, very strongly about. Mm-hmm. Saying, look, this is what we'd like to be able to use on the web. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. If you go through and you read all the details about the ACID 2 test, they're very clear that it's not a standards compliance test. It's not like if you pass this, then the following is true. Mm. It's a real world torture, tongue twisting test, and it's super exciting.
Excellent.
Super exciting that it works.
Congratulations!
Thank you.
That's good news. So you guys busted open Triton. Triton. Oh, that's the code name for IE9. Sorry, I'm just kidding. Oh man, I'm gonna leave that in there.
You can leave that in there.
In order to actually get this done, you guys had to write a fair amount of code. You had to go into MSHTML. You had
absolutely
to open up Trident, not Triton, which has no meaning. And so let's talk a little bit about, we're going to meet some devs, which is really cool. Let's talk a little bit about, you actually have an interesting history because you were part of the people who created Mosaic.
Yes.
And you also sit on the CSS Standards Compliance Board.
I do. I actually co-chair the CSS, or the HTML Working Group. I sit occasionally on the CSS Working Group and a couple of other ones, but we've got other people covering those too. So
I mean, this kind of leads into the more general topic of why is standards compliance so important to the web development community and in general, in your opinion? I mean, let's talk a little bit about that.
I know. Call on me.
I want to see if Dean knows the answer to this. I think he does.
Okay.
So I've been working on IE for a couple of years, and it's great because as I go to different conferences or talk to different folks, whether it's Eric Meyer, Dave Shea, it's great because they always get this look on their face whenever they actually hear me say that standards are important, and they usually follow up with Chris's question, well, why do you think that they're important? And really, the overriding goal is interoperability, right? I, as a developer, right now I've got my own pages, my own domains registered, and my own sites. Mm-hmm. I want to write a site once. I'd really prefer to not have to rewrite it a little bit this way for this browser, a little bit that way for that other browser. Mm-hmm. Right? And so interoperability is huge. That really is the end goal. That's the dream. And a lot of people have this dream around interoperability, and I think that with with every day, with every month, with every release, right, we get closer to that interoperability end goal. And standards, I think, are a crucial means to that end. Right, you go through and you define a standard, and then people understand how it should work.
Understood.
Now, at the same time, wow, there are a lot of different kinds of standards, and there are a lot of different subtleties to standards. I mean, you've given enough talks about some of the flavors of standards. There's open standards, of course.
There are open standards, de facto standards, de jure standards. I mean, even proprietary systems at some point do become standards of one form or another.
Yeah. So there's standards. There's standards.
You know, the great thing about standards is there's so many to choose from. Yes.
Interesting. So now, what about one of the things I remember with IE in the early days when I first started working at Microsoft? I was a web developer, and you guys really innovated sort of a platform, right? It was different than just HTML, some JScript, and whatever. You actually decided to make a kind of a development platform out of it, and you added all these new selectors and stuff for CSS, which actually were really interesting, but they weren't standards compliant, and so. You know, you now have millions and millions of web pages that may use those selectors in the case of CSS. How do you innovate and then also maintain compatibility at the same time?
Well, that's always a big challenge. If you look at some of the things that we've done in the past, like a great, you know, the easily the obvious poster child demo of how proprietary and innovation and standards all work together is the X in AJAX. So the X in AJAX is XML HTTP request. It's this IE proprietary feature we delivered back in, I think it was 1998. And it just allowed web developers to go request data from different pages, like not just the page they were on, not just, you know, inserting a new image or whatever, but actually getting data from somewhere else. And then doing something interesting with that data. They could update the page they were on dynamically by going and requesting data and then transforming the data somehow and sticking it back in the page. And this has now actually been picked up by the W3C. It's being sort of specified as an actual recommendation of the W3C at some point. It's in that process at least. And a number of the other major browsers have implemented this for some time. They already support this, and this works across browsers. It's interoperable in that case. It's more important, in fact, that it's interoperable than getting that, you know, piece of paper that says, oh, you're some, you know, gold standard because you have a piece of paper. The interoperability across multiple browsers is what web developers have found so compelling about that.
Outstanding.
At the same point, actually going through the standards process for some things is absolutely crucial and important.
Absolutely, yeah. I think one of the challenges, of course, is that when you go through the standards process, it's not just some process of you know, getting a stamp on something, particularly with web standards, the way that they've historically been developed in a fairly open environment with a lot of different people participating in that, a lot of different, you know, we get web developers in those groups, we get browser implementers, we get people who implement other kinds of systems that have to use that content, and they all have to figure out what the right thing to do is together. You don't just get one perspective of one set of people. Getting those multiple perspectives just builds a stronger specification.
Absolutely. And we've always been a pretty vocal component in the standards bodies, right? Being Microsoft.
Well, you know, we participate in a bunch of them. There are several very important groups. W3C comes to mind. ECMA comes to mind as well. The IETF, IEEE, ISO. You know, Chris, as we said, is the co-chair of the HTML working group.
Yep.
And so Chris gets to spend a lot of his time on IRC channels and on conference calls trying to make sure the right thing happens for the web.
Outstanding.
But Chris's point about interoperability, you know, really is huge. And I want to take another angle on the whole interoperability and standards. Today is Monday, and I go up to a website with my browser, and it works. Tomorrow morning, I install a new version of that browser or a different browser, and I expect that site to still work. And so there's a tension as we try to shift the platform, right? Because you're right, the browser is this powerful platform, right? It's not just a document renderer anymore between script and XML HTTP request. There are a lot of very powerful things you can build in it, right? Outlook Web Access, I think, is my favorite because I use it so much.
Sure.
And if you think about it, the platform behaves in a certain way. Now, you go and you want to make it more standards compliant. Well, the site that worked today, right, had better continue to work tomorrow. And so there's a whole compatibility challenge.
Absolutely.
that we get into, because pretty much people want both, right? Mm-hmm. Consumers want it to just work and to interoperate, and developers want it to just work and interoperate, and they're like, oh, this thing I wrote last week, it better keep working. And you spend a lot of your time wandering around these hallways trying to get the right solution in place to balance those.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we have a unique challenge because at the same time that a lot of web developers out there are clamoring for this interoperable, standards compliancy, at the very same time they're saying that, they're also designing and developing sites today that have to work in IE6 and IE5.5 and IE7, mm-hmm. and because they have to do that, they have to hack around these problems. They have to make up for features that may not be there yet in those versions of IE. They have to hack around the bugs that are in there. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, effectively, they expect IE to keep working that way, to mm-hmm. keep working on their page. And the time that they've spent doing that, of course, is unfortunate, but once they get that working, they expect the page to keep working in IE. And that's been our challenge, is trying to balance those out, to come up with a good solution that allows people to say, hey, I really do know what I expect, and it's the standards behavior, and at the same time, not break websites or tools or systems that are out there today.
Absolutely.
We had some really powerful learnings during IE7. Right?
We had extremely powerful learnings during
IE7. And
you
and I went back and forth a lot.
Yes, we did.
During IE7 around, well, we can't do nothing. We got to do something to get better.
Yes.
Right? And so there were some really straightforward ones that were a lot of fun. Alpha channel transparency, PNG.
That was pretty good.
And it's great because it seems like every other blog post, one of the comments is, when are you guys going to support this? And it's almost as if
people didn't
really get the message. IE7 supports that. Mm-hmm. So there are some that really had, I'd say, no compatibility impact. Mm-hmm. Look, we now support this kind of PNG, or these attributes of a PNG. Great. Mm-hmm. Then there were about 200 or so improvements we made to CSS behaviors.
Yep.
And how'd those turn out?
Well, some of them were pretty straightforward, pretty easy slam dunks, and some of those were, there were huge and great changes to make. They improved our standards compliancy, they improved the interoperability and just overall predictability of the platform. Mm-hmm. But the problem was they were largely incompatible with what people expected us to do in their pages today. And that caused a lot of trouble. We had this concept first introduced by the Mac version of IE5 a very long time ago, called the quirks mode. Quirks mode and standards mode. So deciding which behavior to offer your page, to offer a web page based on whether or not they sort of knew what they were doing about doc types and standards. And the problem that we found is, when IE6 shipped, and we did use this flag in IE6 to switch behavior between more strict interpretation of standards and sort of quirkier, buggy implementation. When IE6 shipped, almost nobody was in standards mode. When IE7 shipped, by contrast, close to half of the web, at least in the US content, was already in standards mode. They're already saying, no, we expect standards. Hmm. Even though a lot of those pages were actually working around the problems and still expecting us to be broken. So, unfortunately, for that large number of pages, mm-hmm. we were still changing behavior on them. We were still causing problems in those pages. And we spent months and months running around to a bunch of different content vendors saying, hey, please fix up your page. You're expecting this behavior. It's broken. Mm-hmm. We built a bunch of tools to help people, improve their content, catch these problems that were standards compliance improvements, but were still causing behavior problems on some pages. And there were still, even after we shipped IE7, even now, we still get people who will complain about pages being broken in IE7. And a lot of times, they don't even understand that they did that because, they're a web developer, but they use a framework. Mm-hmm. And that framework, somewhere buried in it, expected one behavior or another, or it, worked around some IE6 problem. Mm-hmm. And that may not apply necessarily in IE7. You may not need to do that, or we may just implement the standard correctly, and we look broken, mm-hmm. even though what we're doing, if we kind of spoofed one of the other browsers that had the proper behavior in there, mm-hmm. then it would actually work properly.
So I just want to go back to that one. So you're saying that if you take IE7, but you change the user agent string, and you faked it, so you handed
yep.
IE7 the content intended for a non-IE browser, would actually look better in IE7 than the content the site happens to be handing IE.
Expecting it to be IE6, yes.
Right. So look, interoperability, really important. Standards, really important. Wow, the real world web, the way it works right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Chris wants to go and pay some bills, or, you know, you want to go and get something done on the web. The reality on the ground
mm-hmm.
and balancing compatibility with this, you know, improved standards compliance, and right, that's the hard trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, look, for all this context and for all these things that we're saying, the important thing is that last week, of all these really, you know, hard compliance tests out there, we now successfully render this ACID 2 page. And, you know, maybe we can, you know, get off this couch and walk down the hallway.
I think that's great.
I think there are a couple of developers
yeah.
who spent
yeah.
a lot of time on this.
Yeah.
We should just go see it in action.
Let's go check them out. I'll just leave this running.
All right.
All right. Charles, does Channel 9 have a theme song that you're going to be humming as you walk through the
hallway? No.
Yeah, that's a great idea, though.
So
I'll narrate. You just look on Chris just all before right. people get seasick. So we're passing 6th Avenue.
Sure.
Okay.
There's a tester of the dog. 7th Avenue. So the building when we moved here a couple of months ago, people were getting disoriented, couldn't really figure out whose office was where. So someone
came up with this great idea.
Yes, we've got
Alien and 7th.
So all of these guys are named after movies. So you got Alien, Contact. You can see E.T. and Ghostbusters.
I'm at 8th and Contact, in case you're wondering where my office is.
Nice, 8th and Contact. Cool. That's a brilliant idea, actually. It's hard to find things around here in all buildings.
This one in particular, the layout's a little
So are the devs like in Ghostbusters and Hacker Street?
There's Ghostbusters, Hackers, and Indiana Street. It's kind of an outlier, but I think we're down on Ghostbusters Street. All hard at work.
Are we there yet?
We're almost there.
Man, are we there yet?
Where are these devs?
Are
way down
yet?
On 9th Ave.
We're there.
All right, we finally made it to the developer's office.
Yeah, so this is one of our developers. This is Alex Mogilevsky.
Hey. How you doing?
One of the core devs trying to get this stuff done. This is Marcus Mielke, who's the program manager,
yep.
really driving our CSS work in particular.
Absolutely. We've had him on before.
We have.
Excellent.
It's a pleasure to be back.
Absolutely. So what's going on? There's that smiley face. But so a lot of work went to make this happen. Let's talk a little bit about that.
A lot of work went to make that happen. I think, Alex, why don't you sit down and walk us through what you've got on your screen, and then we'll talk about the journey there.
Okay, this is... the window in the bottom is an IE7 version of a smiley face.
Mm.
You can kind of get a smiley. It's kind of a little bit smiley. Like you need imagination to figure that out.
Yeah, for sure.
What you're looking at is actually IE8. It is what it looks currently in IE8, and it will look exactly like this when we ship IE8. Because we are not breaking any compatibility, and this is a compatible mode of IE8, and most of the web relies on particular behavior, including particular incorrect behavior. So, so the incorrect behavior will still be there, unless the new content wants IE to be in standards compliant mode.
So let me
ask us, and then we will show perfectly standard picture.
So let me ask you this question, because I mean, you know, why isn't it possible for the? I mean, I know this is, you know, there's a lot of heavy magic already going on, Well, why isn't it possible for the browser, you know, for Trident and MSHTML and where the logic happens, to understand that, hey, this is not a correct way to do things, and it's probably was written back in the day, so we're going to render it and we're not going to freak out.
You know,
and then
the challenge there really is that we don't even know for content that's built after we release IE8 what version of IE they're trying to get it to work with. And in particular, you know, web developers are trying to get their content to work across multiple versions. They're going to want it to work in IE6 and IE7 even after we've shipped IE8, until those browsers aren't really part of the mix of users that come to their website. They have to make it work across all those browsers. They also, of course, are going to want to make it work across other browsers, and that's really where our standards compliance work comes in, to enhance that interoperability.
Okay. So let's look at the smiley face and then tell me, you know, what are we looking at? I mean, what's significant?
Okay, so what's this is the real test. It is really the live page. Let me open this again. This is the address. I'm going there. I'm going to click here and take the test. And this is the bug version. This is not the performance you're going to see in the reality. The test looks like this. If you look at the source code of this, you're going to see lots and lots and lots of CSS here. This is a really, really good and well-constructed test that tests the presence of many interesting CSS features. There is a reason this is a difficult test to pass unless you have these features. So we couldn't just fix a couple of bugs in IE6 and just, hey, like now we pass the test. We could, but no, really, we couldn't. because it's not a compliance test. It is a test the presence of features, and there are some really interesting features that it asks for, like generated content and treating and embedding images right into the CSS file as encoded things. It is difficult to just add unless you have the feature. So now we have the features. So we have the features, and we implement the features in the right way. So we pass the test. Okay. So in a way, passing the test is not something that we build a project around. We build a project around implementing important features in a standards compliant way, and when we do it, the test to a degree just happens.
Okay. So in other words, this is a side effect of just making IE more compliant.
Alex has a very, very good point that our main focus was really to make our platform more predictable, more reliable. Because, I mean, as a lot of people know there, and also when I did the work previously on Channel 9, where we talked about all the bugs we fixed and all the still issues which were in the engine, we realized that we really need to focus on building something where the web developer community out there can rely on.
Yeah.
And also, this IE8 effort gave us the opportunity to really look at the, and I can just show you, like,
on Alex's desk.
The 400 pages of this wonderful spec here. And look, like, how do all these features actually work together and build an engine which provides a holistic view around these feature sets.
This looks like brand new. I have another copy of mine that I was actually using for the last couple of years.
Wow.
And it is
well read. See, I mean, that's important. There's a developer with the compliance spec. Right on, man.
I think we made sure every developer had a copy of that.
Yeah, actually, we made jokes because whenever we updated the spec on the working group side, we kind of like had to print a new copy because we just love to have notes and stuff, and then we carried all these different notes from the other specs with us around. It got a little crazy in the end, but so we're very happy that the spec is also solidifying now and kind of being to a point where it's really safe and solid to implement. Another challenge what we faced while writing this new layout engine was that this spec is actually quite complex, and it still has a lot of areas in there which there are ambiguities in there. And so we actually worked very well together with Mozilla, Opera, all the other browser vendors to close these holes and provide a spec anyone out there can pick up and implement a version of it. And this is the SA2 test you just saw. It's just a proof of that, that this is possible.
Excellent. So what were some of the big engineering challenges to pull this off? Like, what are some of the big problems that you had, Drew? You know, what kept you up late at night? Huh?
Well, actually, most of the time it wasn't the test. It was building all the features that gets together.
Mm.
It's hard to write a browser. It is. There is a reason they don't show up from many sources. There is a number of them. It's actually amazing how many different code bases are there that implement all of these complex features. But it is hard. Not particularly hard to put a number of characters in line and find where line break is. It is not particularly hard to position a rectangle on the screen when you're given coordinates of a rectangle. But if you get all of the features in that book and make all of them work together in any combination, that becomes
and
difficult.
And add margin collapsing to it.
That's a fantastic feature. We actually before we started working on the new version, we did look in detail in ACID2 and broke that down into a number of particular features to show what does this feature bring to this particular smiley face. Hey, Marcus, it's your document.
Yeah,
do you want to go over it?
Yeah, I can just walk you through a little bit. Alex, if you show me where you parked it.
It's somewhere here on my dashboard. Here.
Alrighty.
Cool.
So what we did is pretty much we took the ACID2 test, and as you have seen in the view source over here, it's pretty much aligned around each line of the smiley face. There are certain CSS rules which apply to each line of the smiley face. So what we did is we started breaking down each of these lines and just removed these features and just see how it still renders in our old engine, IE7, to really identify all the bugs and all the problems, all the features missing to make this wonderful smiley face come to life. So, for example, here's like a bug where we say, hey, we had the P tag not closing correctly according to the HTML 4 specifications. Obviously, we had to do this to pass this wonderful test. Data URL not supported. Is for another one of these examples.
What's a data URL? Can you let me get to
that question? Alex, I think, pointed out very nicely that this test is not just a collection of bugs. It's also a set of very hard to implement features.
Mm-hmm.
So we took the approach to kind of like group all the bugs, group all the features, and when we built a new engine to kind of make sure we have a holistic approach in making sure all these pieces work along the way in addition to the bugs. So data URL was one of these features which was a little challenging for us because it hasn't been previously implemented. We didn't have some similar infrastructure in the past, so we first had to figure out how to integrate it into our engines.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's here, as you have just seen. So I don't want to go through all the bugs by detail, just maybe pointing out a couple highlights. So we had, for example, a shrink to fit bug in here with our relative positioning, which I think a lot of web devs see as a major pain point when working with IE in the past, where if you add relative positioning together with floats, some really interesting effects would happening. Mm-hmm. And they also showed up in this state. And luckily, all these effects are not only fixed with a new engine. So I think it would be a relief for a lot of folks out there to hear that.
Good.
Besides CSS, another important aspect was there was a lot of HTML features along the way we also addressed. I mentioned the closing P tag. Mm-hmm. We did object fallback now correctly. I think the ABR element is now also the way it worked. And we added a lot of these things along the way. The biggest features I want to call out, which are tested in the spec, are generated content, which I think is very exciting that that works out. And the biggest one, I think, for the designer community is display table types. Now you can have table-like layouts not using the table element, so you don't need to pollute your markup with table tags, and your accessibility of your page is much better too. So it's a great.
Table layout is a selector.
It is a display type. So you can write a selector which targets a certain element and turn that into a display, the visual output into a table type.
Cool.
And yeah, as you can see, there is a long list of bugs and issues we addressed, like four pages long, which enabled us to actually pull this test together.
Excellent. Well, nice work. So what else do you want to talk about?
Well, you know, I
Mr.
think
Wilson.
Right now the important thing is that this is a great milestone for us. We're really happy to have hit this milestone. But the point that I really wanted to make before we wrap up is just that, you know, passing or supporting this, you know, getting a smiley face here is kind of the first step for us. It's mm-hmm. one thing that we're doing on our path to better standards compliance. And better standards compliance is really only one of the things we're doing for developers, for that matter, in this release. Mm-hmm. And as Dean kind of talked about before, we've got a lot more than just web developers, a lot more constituencies in that we need to make happy. So,
but, I mean, that's an interesting point. I mean, can we touch on why you can say that? I mean, are you talking about the Shadok view and MSHTML.dll?
You know, just all of the user experience, the administration kit, all of the features that we do to support, you know, IT admins and corporations and you know, my mom, who is an IE user, you know, all of the different features that need to go to those different people.
Outstanding. Well, hey, great work, you guys. This is I want to come back and you know, dig a little bit more into this brain salad, you know, brain
yep.
salad surgery,
yep.
if you will. Because you guys do a lot of heavy magic to pull off this test. And I saw the check-in mail. And I saw a lot of code was checked in. So,
oh, yeah.
Nice work, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. We'll talk to IE again soon.
Absolutely.